Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning. And today my guest is Dr. Ron Staubo, who is an osteopath in Sydney, Australia. He's also an Alexander Technique teacher. And we're going to talk today about those two fields that he is trained in, and perhaps a bit about how they could complement each other, what some of the differences are, and that sort of thing. I hope you don't mind my calling you Rob. Is that okay?
Yes, Rob is fine. That's
Rob,
right.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And could you begin by giving our listeners, let's start with the Alexander technique, a very short description or definition of the technique?
Sure. Well, I see Alexander technique as teaching people a method for moving with the most coordination and the least strain on their bodies.
Yeah, that sounds good. And osteopathy is a slightly more complicated question, because in America, osteopaths are generally more or less like MDs. But the kind of osteopath you are is a bit different. And could you just say a bit about what osteopaths like you do?
Well, sure. Well, I mean, the first point to make there is that we are not medical doctors, mm-hmm. even though we can go by the title of doctor mm-hmm. in all our correspondence, etc. But so in that sense, the kind of osteopathy I am is very much just a manual therapist in a way. And so osteopathy is seen as a form of manual healthcare that aims to improve one's connective tissue structure and how we move. And it's really based on a set of principles, and the main one being that all the systems of the body are interrelated and act as a concerted unit.
Right. Now, that last sentence of yours, I suppose we could attach to the Alexander technique as well.
Well, this is the thing, is that I think you often find modalities that aim for the same goal, but clearly the differences are in the application and methodology that they use. And I think that is what sets apart some rather fundamental differences between osteopathy and Alexander technique.
So if someone comes to you as won't even label them patient or student yet, but comes for help, are you primarily going to function as an osteopath, or might you be for an hour or so an Alexander teacher?
Well, that's a good question, and I think there are a few things there. Firstly, people don't just come to you for help in a general way. They usually already come to you for your osteopathy skills or your Alexander technique. So they have usually pre-selected the modality that they want you to use. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that I don't sort of think of myself as being first and foremost one nor the other. I try as best I can to integrate these things, because in my mind, they are part of a bigger system. They operate together. But if somebody comes to me, for example, for Alexander technique, mm-hmm. well, then that's what I will do. Mm-hmm. Okay, it will be just Alexander technique, because mainly because that's what they've pre-selected, but also I love teaching in that way, and I think it's ultimately an amazing skill to learn, and one of the best things you can give someone is like a gift to give them that skill.
Mm-hmm. So in that case. You might give them some verbal instruction, some very light hands-on guidance, that sort of thing.
But if they come to me for Alexander technique, mm-hmm. then it'll be the modality of Alexander technique, lessons in the more standardized way that people give lessons. Now, if they should then say, look, it's a tricky one. If whilst doing Alexander technique, I feel that they would benefit from some structural work, and by that I'm talking a more direct osteopathic approach, then I might suggest it. But I think that on the whole, it happens more the other way around, that somebody comes to see me for osteopathy, and it is within the framework of osteopathy that I think that they would be much better off as an adjunct or even as a substitute having some Alexander lessons. Mm-hmm. But I can elucidate on that much more clearly in the way that I categorize people into which modality I think that they would best be suited to. Mm-hmm. And this is what I think I struggled with for a long time, because of the fact that the main difference between the two is that osteopathy is a direct technique. It is contacting barriers and restrictions in people's connective tissue, and it's trying to move through those barriers, and it's using way more force, although osteopathy can be extremely gentle, than say a pair of Alexander hands would be using, which are very much listening, guiding hands.
Right.
But the model that I use, seeing as we both have both techniques are trying to help the person to move better in a very broad way of conceptualizing it. But I see movement as having three different components to it. The first is mobility, or the sort of range of the actual range of joint motion that you have. Mm-hmm. The second one is strength. So for any given movement, you require a certain amount of strength to execute those movements and in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And the last part is, motor control, which is a flashy way of saying coordination. How do you coordinate all of the moving parts that relate to that movement? And so for me, osteopathy is really good at coming in at the first point, at mobility. They're really good at finding mobility restrictions in the body, be they in the muscle system, the visceral system, the fascial system, mm-hmm. the vascular system. So it's really good at clearing those restrictions in a direct way. And Alexander technique is the technique par excellence for treating the motor control element to it, for really thinking about the way in which our brain is setting up the movement, pre-setting the tension, etc., mm-hmm. and making sure that the signal to those muscles is as efficient as possible and not tainted by excessive tension. So the strength element I'll talk about sort of separately, mm-hmm. but within this, way of categorizing movement into three different categories, I'm able to decide when a person comes to see me for osteopathy, for example, what in their display of movement, which particular category do I think they need to focus on first? Mm-hmm. And this comes to kind of your assessment in osteopathy that you don't really do in Alexander technique, I guess, but is assessing how somebody moves and looking for restrictions in their movement and deciding that if they are just incredibly stiff and can't really attain some what I call archetypal postures, these postures that we've used for thousands of years, sitting, kneeling, crouching, squatting, these rest positions, if they can't conform to those positions well because they are so very restricted, then I might think that osteopathy and clearing some of those restrictions first might be a better approach. And let's take the different idea that somebody comes in and they are very, very floppy, very kind of loose, low blood pressure, hypermobile. They can sit in all of those postures that I talked about, but they don't move in a very coordinated fashion. They can't sort of get the bits to connect together. And in that sense, then I would think that using motor control or Alexander technique to teach them a better awareness of what they're doing, a better awareness of where their parts are in space, then I would move them more towards Alexander lessons. Mm-hmm. But I think that you can always do these things together. So in reality, in my osteopathy consultations, probably the very first thing that I do when I put my hands on is Alexander hands. I'm really listening to see, are they collapsing or are they not collapsing? Where are they collapsing and when? And how does their structure illustrate where they have been collapsing over time? There's certain hinges in the neck area or in the middle back area or the low back area that show that these creases have been brought about by abnormal movement patterns. Mm-hmm. So I start with that kind of listening hands, and I probably end every osteopathy session with an ability with trying to actually get them to come up a little bit more. So if I had to sort of broadly say how the two things work, I think that osteopathy is playing with the fabric of our structures, mm-hmm. and provides a sort of potential space that the person can use. But it's Alexander technique that alters the very signal for ensuring that you take up that space. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just kind of creating potential space, but then the person just obviously reenacts the same movements that they always have done. Mm-hmm. And so this is how I am able, I guess, to operate without conflict in my own mind.
Right.
I realize the two things are in some sense at odds with one another, mm-hmm. being both direct and indirect approaches. Mm-hmm. But I have this model helps me to navigate through those differences, mm-hmm. and actually provide somebody with the tools to hit those three elements to motion.
Mm-hmm. The third element, which we haven't touched on, is strength, right?
Yeah.
And
that's right.
So someone might be floppy and not have very much strength, and Alexander might be a useful modality to get them out of that floppiness, but they still might not have a lot of strength, right?
Yeah, I think that there are a few things there. I mean, strength is this kind of catch-all term that almost relates broadly to just power. But the thing is that it doesn't really have a vector in it. What Alexander's technique does, obviously, is help to coordinate the timing of things, the amount of effort required, so it's not excessive for the given demand that you know, the given movement that you want to enact. Right. And so strength, I think, comes in a much more subtle way with Alexander technique, where it sort of just ensures that you have the right amount of strength for a given movement. There's another aspect of osteopathy that relates to strength, and that is that if you are restricted in range, so for example you are not able to squat easily, you lack sort of range in your hips,
right,
you can't be strong in a range of motion that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't get into that position, then you can't display any strength in it. So one of the things for removing restrictions in people's hips or shoulders or backs is that they're then able to produce a larger range of motion within which they can get stronger in that position. So there is a natural, again, potential space gives the potential for you to strengthen up in that area. I'm sure a lot of osteopaths do give more classic strength exercises and all these buzzwords like strengthening your core and everything. Mm-hmm. But I've always riled against that a little bit because it always feels somewhat reductionist, you know, that
right.
one decides we're going to try and strengthen this part of you or that part of you. And it always doesn't really respect the nature in which we're so connected, and strength should really be distributed across your whole structure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting what you've just said about strength, because it, in a way, it seems like the strength question, when it comes up, illustrates perhaps a both a difference and a similarity of Alexander and osteopathy, in that I think an Alexander teacher might say, well, the one reason why a person doesn't have a lot of strength is that they can't move very easily, so they don't do a lot of moving, and it's easier just to sit and watch TV for them. And if they can get a little better guidance of their system, they'll be in less discomfort, they'll do things and build up strength organically. And what you said is fascinating, because you're saying, well, one reason they may not have strength is they can't even get to the place to, as you said, demonstrate or manifest the strength. They don't have, for example, hip flexibility that can take them in certain places where strength might be come to bear.
Exactly, and one of the things that it became really apparent to me is that when training for Alexander technique, you talk to people about how they've molded into the shapes that they are now, that their movement patterns have molded their connective tissues into a certain level of stiffness, you know, after pulling down excessively for mm-hmm. each of their movements. Mm-hmm. And we can understand that. It's good for people to understand that this isn't something that happened just overnight. This is something that built up over a number of years of using themselves in a less than efficient manner. Mm-hmm. But what I began to realize is that after the years of doing this, you need to have an appreciation for just how tough connective tissue really is. And it's really akin to leather. It's when it loses its extensibility and mm-hmm. the body adapts and lays down these cells that are more fibrous in nature, much, much stiffer. Mm-hmm. In the end, my understanding is that it's the connective tissue that actually ends up modeling the movement that you're able to do. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in the beginning, of course, because infants all start with this beautiful range and beautiful execution of movements, and of course, you know, as Alexander Technique teaches, we wonder at just how beautifully coordinated they are. Now that goes, so all the signals were pretty much perfect in those early days. But after a while, when those hips and shoulders and back start to stiffen, they become the limiting factor. Not just a faulty signal, or that you've built up a poor habit of presetting too much tension for a movement, but actually the structure itself, the fabric of your body, becomes the limiting factor. And this is true even, it's funny for me to say it, but I mean, I wanted to believe that Alexander Technique, and this is a limitation in my mind, I wanted to believe that after, say, 10, 20 years of Alexander Technique, you would ask people to sit in some of these postures, kneeling postures, sitting cross-legged, sitting with your legs out straight, crouching, squatting, movements, positions we've been using for thousands of years. And you may still find that even teachers who use themselves very, very well for standing, sitting, everyday movements, if you then ask them to approach these end range positions, they still don't have the connective tissue extensibility for it. Right. And so that gave me an appreciation for just how tough connective tissue is, and why I thought about that model for movement, and why I categorize people into perhaps we should be creating space first or alongside Alexander Technique in order to just allow them to get into that range.
Right. And I can say from my own experience that I found what you said to be very true. I've been teaching for, I guess, over 35 years now. And I still have restrictions that don't seem like they're such a great thing to have. But I've been helped enormously by manual work. It hasn't happened to be osteopathy. And in my case, it was a version of physical therapy. that made a gigantic difference to me, and in a sense address those kind of structural issues that you talked about by very targeted exercises in my case. And so I was kind of, I mean, I guess what you provide is both in the same office, so it's kind of more convenient, right, for somebody they don't have to.
I would agree with you in principle that it certainly satisfied my own curiosity within the field of movement, I suppose, which includes osteopathy and includes Alexander technique.
Right.
But I just lost my point. You were mentioning
physical therapy. In my case,
it was a type of physical therapy. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I do have both of these modalities in the one place. Mm-hmm. But I think what's always important is having to bridge the gap in the understanding of the patient or the client. It doesn't matter, because, you know, we may think we know what the best thing for that person is, but there can be a real barrier to them enacting your advice or understanding your advice if they have very different expectations, for example, of what you're going to do in a session, mm-hmm. or if they have very limited understanding of something that seems very obvious to us, like, for example, that the body works as a whole unit. So when trying to think of those of a definition for Alexander technique and osteopathy, it's you always feel like you're selling both of them short, because there's no short answer for it, and the subtleties of each approach, you know, there are many. But so I tend to have a few kind of set things that help people to think about themselves in a more holistic way, mm-hmm. and one of them is when it comes to connective tissue. I sort of talk about elastic bands. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you can have a thin elastic band, and it's very easy to deform that elastic band, and you can have a very stiff one that's cold, mm-hmm. and it's intrinsically stiffer. The fabric of it is intrinsically stiffer. So you give them an understanding of how connective tissue works and how it adapts. Mm-hmm. But the main one that I use is this notion that certain structures like a tent or a football, that when you look at a tent and it's deformed or it's all floppy, you immediately know what needs to happen to that tent to get it to function at its best. It needs to be kind of held apart to mm-hmm, mm-hmm. spread that tension across its structure, in the same way as a deflated football needs to be pumped up to its spherical shape. And when you do that, the ball is able to bounce and roll easily, mm-hmm. and the tent is able to withstand a lot of structure. And I basically say that our structures are almost identical to tents, in the sense that we have bones for these internal rods of the tent, and we have elastic connective tissues that are the same as the fabric of the tent. Mm-hmm. And once people get this idea that actually you want to be held apart, it gets people out of that notion that they need to strengthen their core or, you know, build up some strength in the fabric of their body, much more that they need to distribute the strain across all of their structure, so no single structure bears an excessive amount of load or strain, which tends to make it fail.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to get into people's head the idea that we move as a whole unit functionally, and away from dissecting tissues into this muscle or that muscle. Mm-hmm. And I really feel that actually in the field of osteopathy, it's all changing, which is why defining it's quite difficult, because, you know, there's the field just gets bigger and bigger. We know a great deal more about pain, the mechanisms of pain, the neuroscience of pain. And so a lot of osteopaths now are incorporating this thing, as everyone comes to osteopaths in pain, they need to understand that signal and how does it relate to people's cultural beliefs, their own pain levels, their understanding of what might happen if they're in pain. What does it mean? Does it mean their tissues are being damaged? So osteopathy is actually a slightly more adaptive treatment modality, because it's now incorporating all of the advances in neuromuscular movement, myofascial work, pain medicine. Mm-hmm. And my particular interest actually also is in a visceral function and how our organs and our emotions tie in at the cortex level to the level of tone that somebody presents to you, even as an Alexander lesson or even as an osteopath.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a lot of food for thought. It's we're getting towards the end of our time. Is there anything you'd like to add before we come to a close?
Not really. Just to say that that whenever one defines oneself as something, it's a limiting thing.
Right.
I feel that I have a really broad interest in a number of different arenas, and that evolves the more you're in it and the more people that you see. Mm-hmm. So in terms of this idea of categorizing the people that come to see me into which modality to use, I also feel very clearly that there are some people for whom a more cognitive emotional approach is warranted, and for some people certain traumas, whether they are physical or emotional, sexual, all of these different things and how they affect the cortex, there are different modalities that people can use if you feel that is the strongest component to their presentation. So I have tried to kind of have enough skills, and not necessarily, and I can outsource for these too, but in order to say on the outset, look, I think that this is the biggest element to your presentation. Mm-hmm. And hopefully if they trust you, and that is an essential component of someone improving, they must like you and they must trust you. Mm-hmm. And it must, they might have some kind of belief in your interpretation of it, then I think you've got something that I feel you can best help people.
Right, and that what you just said, I believe, is, I'm sure, equally true for Alexander teachers and osteopaths and
yes, of course,
pretty much anybody who works directly with people using their hands and they're thinking. Yeah,
well, because you can't separate out these fields in somebody's self, I suppose, and that's why Alexander was so clever. His use of that word really incorporates the psychophysical components of somebody's being, right? It is everything all rolled in.
Absolutely.
But no, and I really appreciate you contacting me and showing an interest in Alexander teacher using different modalities. So thank you.
Oh, well, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. My guest today has been Dr. Ron Stalbo. Rob Stalbo.
Same. It's the same as you.
Right. Exactly. An osteopath in Sydney, Australia. And he's also an Alexander Technique teacher. So if anything about his particular combination of skills intrigues you, and you live in Sydney area, I'll put a link to his website by the interview. I'll put a link to a site that will enable you to find an Alexander teacher anywhere. And is there, Rob, a sort of a worldwide listing of osteopaths that I could provide a link to?
I think it's per country, but osteopathic.com.au is the one here that gives you a list of practitioners in the regions that they work in.
Okay, and I guess as I mentioned earlier, in America, osteopaths are generally essentially medical doctors.
That's right. Not
so
here.
Not there. Not in England either. I know that. So, okay. Well, Rob, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for the opportunity.